could have been a cricket score in the end.
He's got a conversion rate of 69.6%, which is just incredible.
Joe, you've been looking at some of the odds.
I also had a look at the yellow card markets, you know.
The depth of that squad is frightening.
Atinia Drogba.
Correct.
Frank Lampard.
Correct.
Wayne Rooney.
Hello and welcome to the Squawker podcast. This week I'm joined by Squawker Dave O'Brien. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm alright, thanks, Nick.
Fantastic. I'm joined by Ligue 1 expert and staff writer Pete Sharland. Hello, Pete.
Afternoon, Nick.
And we're joined fantastically, I'm pleased to say, by the other Squawker data analyst. There's not just one doing YouTube and podcasts and all that. TJ Johnson. Hello, TJ.
Afternoon, Nicholas.
How are you doing?
Very well, how are you?
Fantastic, fantastic. TJ is a Portsmouth fan.
Play up, Pompey.
Fantastic. So, as you're well aware on this show, there are some rules in place. You're not allowed to say the word banter, lol, lad, elmao, any sort of miscreant language like that. You have to put 10p in a pot, and punishments will be doled out as appropriate. Let's start off with some hot topics. Some big games in the Premier League this weekend, and the biggest one of them all is the Manchester Derby. Contrasting fortunes for both teams currently. Dave, you're a Man United fan. What's your assessment of Man United going into this game? What are they looking at?
Well, I think we look quite good against Chelsea. We set up quite nicely, two banks of four, you know, Mata off RVP, and that sort of gave us a solidity that we've not seen this season. To be fair, we saw a lot of solidity under David Moyes, but not a lot going forward. But I think with the United against Chelsea, we looked good for a lot of the game. I'd say from 60 to 80 minutes, we were poor, we didn't have any energy, but then we brought it back in the last 10 minutes. I think the thing that I liked the most about it was how we set up man for man in midfield against Chelsea's midfield, because Chelsea midfield has been pretty awesome this season. The likes of Matic, Fabregas and Oscar really ripping it up, and I think we defended very well against those problems, I'd say.
So, obviously, the big story, everyone's talking about Fellaini's form. You know, is it just a couple of games flash in the pan? Is he playing for a move away in January? I mean, is this a real turn in fortune? I mean, what do you reckon?
I think it's utilising Fellaini and giving Fellaini the confidence to be Fellaini in a way. Like, against Chelsea, he had the job on Fabregas, and he absolutely did a perfect job on him, really. Fabregas failed to create a chance in open play in the game for the first time in the league this season. He only completed 5 passes in the first half in the opposition's half. So Fellaini really did nullify, but then again, Fabregas did get the assist for the Drogba goal. So obviously, Fellaini couldn't have done anything from the corner situation, but in the actual game, in play to play, he was closing him down. He had quite a nice battle with Matic. Remember, there was a lovely situation where Fellaini tackled Matic, Matic tackled Fellaini, and Fellaini came away with the ball. So this Marouane Fellaini looks confident, looks aggressive, looks ready to, you know, really step up. And for that £28 million, obviously, we want him to step up. So it looks like he's finally hitting a bit of form.
So obviously, Fellaini attacking the ball as we've wanted to see him do for ages for the set piece which led to Van Persie's equaliser late on. TJ, from City's point of view, they've had obviously a difficult result in midweek against Newcastle. How do they bring it back from that? What's their strategy going into this?
Oh, it's quite interesting because the last three games they've had actually quite disappointing results, and from my opinion they've only actually started to play badly against Newcastle last night. Against the FK Moscow, they were excellent for the first 60 minutes. You know, got their two goals, played really, really well, created some good chances. But obviously then, Mangala, who I think has had a bit of an indifferent season, kind of made the mistake that got CSK back into the game and they gave away a penalty. And they eventually drew that. Against West Ham at the weekend, I thought they actually kind of dominated them in the stats-wise, completed more passes, created more shots. Created more chances, had more shots, kind of dominated the game in terms of that. They just kind of got overturned in the middle of the park. I thought Alex Song did a bit of a job on Yaya Toure. And kind of like, I think the like lack of confidence from the Champions League is kind of going over into the domestic competitions now. They didn't really look like last night. Didn't look at the races at all. They kind of looked like they could kind of turn up and just get the job done. There was like no pace in their game, and it looked like they could just kind of like pass around, and like they break through Newcastle really, really easily. And they just didn't really do that. A couple of problems that I see with them at the moment is that they're kind of really, really heavily dependent on Yaya Toure. So he's completed the most passes out of anyone in the Premier League this season with 647. But compared to this time last season by this time he'd created 10 chances, got one assist and scored 4 goals. But this season in the same period he scored 1 goal, got no assists and created only 5 chances.
So I think a lot of people would agree that Yaya Toure's performances are symptomatic of Man City's in a way, is that they look like they're the best team on paper, more or less, you know, very close with Chelsea, but it seems to be only when they're bothered and yeah, Chelsea definitely seem to be extremely bothered this season to sweep everyone in their way. What do you think? I mean, how should Man City line up in terms of, you know, trying to get the goals which are ultimately going to win this game? Should they play one up front, two up front? I mean, what's the essential solution to that?
Yeah. I think that was one of the main problems last night, is that Pellegrini, obviously a bit worried about their form, put out a really, really strong side. But I don't think many of the players really wanted to be out there. They were like, oh, it's League Cup, like, it's Newcastle, really weak Newcastle team, I can't really be asked for this. Mm. And the 4-4-2 is kind of not really working at the moment. Like, they're playing David Silva on the left, and for me, that's like nowhere near his best position. He needs to be in the number 10 behind Aguero. Aguero, Navas, Milner making those runs off him in the number 10. The way I see it is, especially against the United team, the way United are lining up at the moment, I quite fancy David Silva in that role, kind of against Daley Blind. I think he could really do a job there.
Okay. So interesting things to consider. A lot to watch out for. A lot of battles, especially in midfield, if Fellaini and Blind line up again. Looking at a slightly different game between two teams who are really having a tough time of it recently. Aston Villa versus Spurs at Villa Park. Pete, you've been looking at Villa for us. It's not going well, is it?
I think the problem with Villa at the moment is there's no goals. Obviously, they went to Anfield a couple of weeks ago. They got a brilliant result. They beat Liverpool 1-0. Since then, they've lost 5 games on the bounce. They haven't scored in those 5 games. I think it's really symptomatic of their problems that Christian Benteke hasn't scored since returning. It was sort of built up Benteke's return as Villa's saviour, because obviously in his debut season he did so well. He's been out for a long time with injury, obviously missed the World Cup. And since returning, he's looked okay, but you can tell he's really off the pace in terms of match sharpness, and I think that's really affecting them.
So I was listening to Villa QPR on Monday on 5Live, and Steve Claridge was going bananas, saying, basically making the point that Paul Lambert has got not that bad a team at his disposal. Mm. And when the team sheet came through, Claridge was expecting it to be 4-3-3, but instead it wasn't that. And he was making the point quite vociferously that Lambert can do better with this group of players. Is that a view you subscribe to?
Yeah, no, I was covering this game for Squawker, and during the match, I kept looking at the way Villa were lining up. You looked at it and you thought Wijnman and Bong Lahore, either side of Benteke, really spread the pitch and make QPR struggle. Obviously, Loftus Road isn't the widest pitch around, so it's always going to be tricky, but Bong Lahore was coming so narrow, and you just looked at it and you thought, use your pace, get out wide, do what you do best. QPR just stifle Benteke, they stifle the midfield as well. I think in midfield, they're really missing Fabian Delph. Obviously, he made his England debut. He's been playing really well for them, and he's a little bit underrated among fan people who don't watch Villa so often, and he's absolutely crucial for them. Mm. I think that when he comes back, and when Benteke gets fit, that'll be when we can really judge Lambert on how well Villa are actually doing. But I think at the moment it's a bit harsh to say that he could do better, because he has been missing a couple of key players.
The thing with Christian Benteke is it's not actually that he's out of form. Christian Benteke doesn't like scoring in September, doesn't like scoring in November, doesn't like scoring in December. As soon as January comes, Christian Benteke likes scoring. So last season, when Benteke was injured in the campaign, he got himself 10 goals. 6 of them came up after January the 1st. Going back to the season before, where he was very, very prolific, 14 of his goals came after January. So with Benteke, just got to get into the new year. Then from the new year onwards, he'll start scoring your goals. So I think this Villa side will be absolutely fine after that point.
Can they afford to have a striker though, who costs £16 million and only scores after January?
Well, they can do. If he's going to score 19 goals in the league, if you're 14 of them are going to come after January, that's absolutely fine.
So, au contraire to Wyclef Jean, instead of being gone till November, he's gone till January.
He is, yes.
Which is problematic for a Premier League side who need goals as much as Aston Villa do. It seems like they need to distribute it a bit. Dave, from Spurs' point of view, I mean, they're a bit up and down at the moment. Pochettino's obviously not happy with certain squad members, and he's happy with others. What's your assessment of their chances against Villa?
I think they've got you know, a very good chance against Man City. In a way, Joe Hart kept them in the game for a period. There was a period where Spurs were massively on top. Joe Hart made some brilliant saves to Christian Eriksen. He saved the penalty. And then obviously Sergio Aguero stepped up and started scoring goals for fun. I think the thing with Spurs is positives in Ryan Mason, you know, completed the most passes in the game against Newcastle. He's looked really good, looked good against City as well. Harry Kane scored 5 goals in his last 3 starts in all competitions for Spurs. But it's getting those two players in the side, and then getting the likes of Eric Lamela, you know, does loads of take-ons, Rabonas, creates chances, scores goals, but inconsistently. So he doesn't do that every week, and that consistency needs to continue. The other problem with Spurs, in my opinion, is their lack of leadership. They just don't have a leader. You've got Yunus Kabul as their captain. He's not a leader. He doesn't look vocal.
Well, why do Spurs, I'm sure a lot of Spurs fans who will be listening to this podcast will be wondering, why, we'll be asking the question, why do Spurs love Younes Kaboul so much? They've offered him a 4-year extension to his contract. He's just been made the club captain, when Hugo Lloris seems like a much more logical choice since he's the France captain. Mm. Why do they love Younes Kaboul so much? What are they seeing there?
I'm not sure. I think they're seeing the Younes Kaboul of 4 or 5 seasons ago.
Days,
when he was at Portsmouth, he was absolutely tearing it up.
Yeah, before we got relegated, he got us out of jail.
Since his injuries have come in, he's just completely faded as a player. And the problem is that when he's playing alongside Vertonghen, you can see that Vertonghen isn't confident in Kaboul, and that worries Vertonghen. I think Spurs, if they're going to challenge for the top four, they need at least one more good quality centre-half and one more centre-forward as well.
But you'd argue that Vertonghen is a very good centre-half when he can be bothered and he's properly motivated.
That's why he wasn't named captain, though.
Yes, exactly. But Kaboul, you know, is the weak link in that central defensive partnership, arguably. But they're not going to replace him because they've just made him captain. It's a very strange situation.
I think Pochettino's reasoning for making him captain was that since he'd arrived at the club, Kaboul had done the most to sort of look as if he was the leader. And you just think, like, if you looked at it over as a big picture, if you looked at Lloris and how he did for France at the World Cup, you just wouldn't have ended up picking Kaboul. It's symptomatic really of Arsenal as well, when they picked Arteta. Are you picking a player because of what he does in the dressing room, or are you picking because of what he does on the pitch? You could argue that both Arteta and Kaboul probably shouldn't be starting for either of their respective teams, yet they kind of have to now because they're captains.
An interesting point. A very interesting point. Let's go to the northeast, and there's an interesting game between Newcastle and Liverpool this weekend. TJ, you've been focusing on Newcastle, and it could be really, they could make things really awkward for Liverpool this weekend, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could. Well, since their draw with Swansea, you know, they're kind of riding the confidence wave now. Unbeaten in 4, drawn 1, 1-2 in the league, and obviously they beat City last night. Yeah, it's kind of really weird. They've since the game at Swansea, they've kind of come out, they dominated the game at home against Leicester with 19 shots to 7. But, you know, kind of took them a shot, like, from outside the area, from Overton, to actually kind of break them down. And I think they really got the confidence after winning that game. Against Spurs, they got outshot, they got outpassed, they created less chances, all the things you would expect. But they defended absolutely resolutely. The key thing for me recently is a couple of their performers, have done really well in the last 3 games since they've been playing really well. So Gabriel Obertan got their highest performance score of anyone in these last 3 games. But what's really interesting about him is that his defence performance score is almost the same as his attack performance score. So it shows that he's really, really putting a shift in for the team. And although he's chipping in with goals, chipping in with, he's creating chances, he's really like attacking fullbacks down that right hand side. He's also getting back, making tackles, making interceptions, and really, really helping out Jan Mata at right back. And also Jack Colback, he's got 90% pass accuracy, which, you know, in a team like Newcastle, that's absolutely vital, because ball retention in teams kind of lower down the league is kind of not as easy. So when you've got someone like that, it's really good. He's also made 5 key passes and created 1 assist in those last 3 games. Considering he only made 7 key passes in the 6 games before that, he's kind of really kicked on in the last 3 games as well.
So the weakness still for Newcastle, I mean, obviously the last 5 games, you know, things have really picked up,
yeah.
But the weakness is still at the back. Yeah. There's problems there.
Yeah.
I mean, is there an obvious solution to sorting out, or just they need to get the goals and just hope to outscore Liverpool? Because Liverpool, you know, they've been struggling to score recently, but they've still got firepower. So what should be their strategy at the back?
Yeah, I think they've just got a couple of dodgy centre-backs, but I've seen
it's a problematic number of dodgy centre-backs to have.
Colaccini hasn't really looked out of the races for the last couple of seasons, and Stephen Taylor, he's hit and miss. I think Ryan Taylor coming back last night, kind of sitting in front of the back four, made an epic goal line clearance, was winning tackles for fun, got the interception for the first goal last night as well. So I think kind of them just bringing in like kind of a Ryan Taylor-esque guy sitting in front of the back four can really, really help out that back four.
Pete, from Liverpool's point of view, I mean, they won a game in midweek, which is great. Mario Balotelli scored.
Even better news.
Which is good news. And they look much more comfortable playing 2 strikers up top. Are they going to continue to play 2 up top?
Well, this is the question you've got to ask. Obviously, last year they played with a 4-3-3, which brought them a lot of success, but they were playing with Sturridge and Suarez, who were just moving about all over the pitch. This year, Rodgers has experimented with the diamond, but in the last couple of games with the diamond, he's been playing Sterling as a striker, which has obviously given Raheem Sterling a more free role, which is good for him, it helps him, but you can tell it's isolating Balotelli. Against Swansea, Barini and Balotelli as a combination looked good. I thought the whole game, Barini looked excellent. Rodgers was talking up in his press conference today, so I'd imagine that he probably will start with Barini and Balotelli rather than Lambert. I feel sorry for Lambert, but ultimately he does need to start scoring himself. You can't say, oh, I deserve to start over Balotelli when you're not scoring yourself. I think the problem for Liverpool is against Newcastle, that might actually work into Newcastle's favour. Against Newcastle's wingers, I think people like Overton, as TJ mentioned, I think they'll really enjoy not really having a winger up against them as well. They'll get in behind. I think against Newcastle, Liverpool should consider playing 4-3-3.
Is Rodgers in trouble if they lose this game? No. Is Rodgers under pressure?
He can't be. He led them to second last year. They almost won the title under him. The transformation was remarkable. Obviously, you lose Suarez, that's just going to damage the team no end. But you can't say that Rodgers is under pressure. I mean, who are Liverpool going to bring in if they sack Rodgers? Dalglish, is he going to come back in?
It's a fair point.
There's no one available. Rodgers has got a long-term goal. He's got players that he believes are right. They deserve more than, what is it, 2 months? Like, he was talking about Markovic today. People are going on Markovic's back. He's only been at the club for 6-8 weeks. Doesn't speak very good English. He's still settling. He needs more time. Rodgers said he's a long-term investment. Mm. So you can't... If you look at someone like Jordan Henderson, when he first joined Liverpool, he was absolutely slated by fans. They were questioning why they paid 20 million for him. What was the point? Now he's the club's vice-captain. People are talking about him as a replacement for Gerrard.
It's a very good point.
You would be patient with these sort of players.
It's a very good point. I mean, Andy Yates, one of our writers, was saying that Markovic needs a hug from his mum. That's what he looks like. He looks like he needs a hug from his mum.
He does look like a little
bit more than that.
I think the main problem for Liverpool comes in terms of conversion. I mean, they've made 98 key passes this season, which is second only to City in the Premier League. The problem is they haven't scored as many goals. Balotelli has taken more shots per game than any other player. With 4.57, the only player that can beat him is Sergio Aguero. There is Aguero scored 9 goals. Yeah. Balotelli hasn't scored any in the league.
Balotelli's been part of the media circus, but and he's had more shots from outside the area than any other forward in the Premier League this season. But he can't surely shoulder all of the blame in this respect for their paucity of goal scoring. He doesn't work up top on his own, does he?
I think no, they know that, and I think the problem is that it comes to Liverpool's transfer policy. I mean, they knew they were going to lose Suarez. I mean, it looked very apparent last summer. This summer, obviously, he did move. I just don't understand why they picked Balotelli to replace him. They almost lost Barini. Then they decided not to sign Wilfred Bonny or Laurent Remy for whatever reason that is. You look at the way Bonny plays, he's a bit similar to Balotelli, but he's not the most mobile. But if you watch him across the pitch for Swansea, he still does a job in terms of work rate, and he loves playing up front by himself. If Rodgers wanted to play a 4-3-3 and keep at it, he should have signed Bonny, not Balotelli.
Fair enough. Let's have a look across Europe. Let's cast our gaze over the lights of the continent. And there's a pretty big game, well, traditionally a pretty big game in the Bundesliga. It's Bayern versus Dortmund, except one team looks absolutely unbeatable at the moment, and the other looks worryingly beatable, at least in the Bundesliga. Dave, you've been having a look at Dortmund for us. What's going wrong there? What's happening with Dortmund?
Well, first, if we look at the stats in the Bundesliga, in the last 6 games, they've not won. They've lost 5 times and they've drawn once. And a big problem with this is their central midfield pairing. So the likes of Nuri Sahin, Gundogan have graced the Bundesliga in recent years. This season they've both been injured, and I think that's been a massive problem for Dortmund. They've been starting the likes of Kjaer and Jojic. It's just not really coming together as a unit. You know, they're not controlling games. They're very open to the break. There's a lot of teams that Dortmund have come to them and been like, right, okay, we know how to play against Dortmund now. We'll give them the ball and we'll hit them on the counter-attack. And it's worked. You know, it's worked very, very well for the teams coming. So there's 2 things that Dortmund might need to do. Potentially change the shape against the weaker opposition. Or, you know, potentially change their style of play. Keep the ball a bit more, you know, go to that Bayern Munich side where you're retaining possession through playing, you know, short pass and that sort of thing. It's just a change in style that might be needed against the weaker sides.
Are Dortmund good enough technically to do that though? I mean, if you look at Bayern ball retention, people like Lahm, people like Alonso, are Dortmund technically good enough to actually do that? And also, it'll be such a big shift in terms of their philosophy. Are they even capable of it?
Well, it's not a massive shift because they do have a lot of the ball when they play the weaker sides in the Bundesliga. And, you know, they average more possession than the opposition when they play the weaker sides. The likes of Sahin and Gundogan, they could definitely play that ball retention game 100%. Mkhitaryan could definitely play that. You know, the likes of Reus, you know, they can keep the ball. You know, they've seen playing for Germany with Reus, that they can keep the ball, but it's that thing that they need to just make the step, do something differently. That's what's been missing from Dortmund as well this season, is the pressing. They've not been getting into the opposition's face, and you can see in the big game against Bayern, sorry, that they can do that. And they will get in their face, and potentially they're going to cause this Bayern side a lot of problems.
So, 2 interesting points based off of what you said is that Gundogan is coming back soon, actually. He's had a couple of substitute appearances back from injury. And also, Dortmund, following on what you said about the Bundesliga kind of figuring out Dortmund, is that in the Champions League, Dortmund are 100%, 3 wins from 3. So maybe it does imply that Dortmund need to try something different in the Bundesliga. But TJ, Bayern are unbelievable and have been for a very long time. This season they look stronger than they have been in years.
Yeah, they do.
Can Dortmund seriously cause an upset here?
Mönchengladbach played against Bayern at the weekend and got a draw, and everyone thought Bayern were going to go there and absolutely smash them. And a couple of really important things that the Mönchengladbach did that kind of halted Bayern is that kind of the man marked Lewandowski. They didn't let Lewandowski have any space in and around, like just in front of the back four, behind the back four. They marked his runs, kept him really, really tight, and just didn't give him any space. That means he couldn't really kind of fly the balls off to Götze and people like that, just in the number 10 balls behind him, which is really, really important, sorry, because Götze scored 6 goals in 7 starts at the start of this season, and he only scored 10 goals in the whole of last year, so he's one of the Bayern players that's really, really kicked on this year. Another really, really important thing is that Robben could potentially be missing this year, and he's been really, really important for Bayern. He's had the most shots. Only Müller and Lewandowski have had more shots than him in the Bundesliga this year, so he could be a really, really, really big miss. Where Dortmund could really hurt Bayern is on the counter. That's what Gladbach did at the weekend, kind of sat back and kind of really tried to hit them. Although Neuer made 4 top class saves, a couple of those from Mönchengladbach counter attacks. So it's going to be really, really tricky for Dortmund, but I can see them maybe snatching a draw if they kind of have that kind of Mönchengladbach game plan against them.
Okay, I'm sure Dortmund can, as an Arsenal fan, I can verify that Dortmund definitely do have that game plan in their pocket.
Yeah.
Because they rope-a-doped us. Rope-a-doped Arsenal in the Champions League last season. Excellent. Let's move on to something a little different. I'm delighted to say that once again we're joined by At Review Football, Ibi Akas. Hello, Ibi.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm alright, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Good. That's really good to hear. What have you enjoyed in the football calendar this week?
What have I enjoyed?
Yeah. What have you enjoyed about football this week?
I enjoyed Newcastle defeating Man City. That was fun.
Yeah. What else?
What else did I enjoy? I enjoyed Liverpool winning.
Okay.
That was nice.
Ibi is a Liverpool good fan. Change. This is
yeah, good change. Yeah. Lovren finally doing something useful, so that's nice.
Ooh, it's harsh on poor Dejan Lovren, isn't it?
No, well, not when you cost 20 million. I expect the world.
Okay.
If you cost 20 million.
Okay.
Mate, only 2 players have made more clearances than Dejan Lovren this season in the Premier League.
So?
Okay, Ibi, we've got a question we'd like to ask you. So we wanted to know that if you were to go into, you know, say you're thinking, I want to move out, I want to move into a new place, right? I want to, you know, kind of go to wherever it might be, Dalston or Shoreditch, or go somewhere a bit cool, and you want to move into a flat, but there's 4 rooms and you're by yourself, but you can only pick Premier League footballers to move in with. But it's a very strange situation in the housing market, I will admit. Which 3 footballers would you pick to move in with you, and why?
First one.
Uh-huh.
Coleman.
Seamus Coleman.
Of Everton, yeah.
Okay, why is that?
Works hard. And what? I just think he would be very clean.
He'd be very clean?
Yeah, determined. He'll be always at the house as well, because he's working hard.
Right.
So he won't annoy me.
Okay.
So he knows this. He'll give me enough space.
He'll give you space, and he'll do the dishes.
He'll do the dishes.
Okay. Who else would you want to live with?
Who else? Probably Morgan Schneiderlin.
Why would you want to live with Morgan Schneiderlin?
Because he's like the enforcer. If there's any trouble going on, he's going to sort it out.
How much trouble is going to happen at your flat?
You never know, someone might knock on the door and be like, hi, I've got some things to say, and I'm trying to barge in. And you've got Morgan there just going, stop.
Surely if you're going to pick a player, you'd pick someone much more physically intimidating than Morgan Schneiderlin. No offence to him, he's a strong guy, but there's Vincent Kompany, there's some really, really big guys in the Premier League. Why Morgan in particular?
Morgan, he's just a nice guy. I mean, he stayed at Southampton, so I respect his loyalty. So I think he won't. If you've got a 12-month contract with your rent,
right? You know, yeah.
He's not going to walk out.
Can't force a move 6 months in then.
No, I'll just be like, mate, you're not going, and he'll just do an angry tweet, and then you know.
Who's the final person that you'd want to live
final
with?
Final person. This has to be the cool person.
Oh, you need someone cool.
Yeah.
So you've got Coleman and Schneiderlin. They're not quite bringing the coolness.
No, Coleman isn't very cool.
Coleman isn't very cool.
No.
All right.
I like him. I respect him.
Okay.
Who would be my cool guy? My cool guy would be. It's going to be Mesut Ozil.
You're going to have Mesut Ozil.
Yeah.
See, Mesut Ozil doesn't strike me as a particularly cool guy.
He's quite cool.
Yeah? What's cool about Mesut Ozil?
When he wants to play football well, he's good.
Oh, right, okay, so it's the whole aloof thing, like yeah. Dimitar Berbatov.
Exactly.
Oh, right, okay.
And also, I was thinking with Mesut, because he's not, like, he's quite lazy. I always feel he's a bit, you know, he doesn't really, he's not an active player, so he's the guy who's always going to be at home, so when you want to play FIFA,
right,
just say, hey, Mesut, do you want to play FIFA? And you'll be like, yeah, why not? And you just play with him all the time.
Do you reckon he's going to be good at FIFA?
I don't think he is, no.
Or anyone he wants to be.
Anyone who wants to be, you know, but he's only good with, like, Real Madrid.
Out of those three players who you picked, who thinks the best at FIFA?
Morgan.
Morgan.
Any reason?
He's very organised. Solid.
Just knows what he's doing.
Exactly. 5-3-2.
Hard to beat.
Hard to beat. Only hits people on the break. You know, solid player.
Fantastic. Who would you, if we had to pick a person that you'd least like to live with, who would that be? Who would you just think, oh no, I can't live with him?
Who would I not want to live with? Probably Joey Barton.
Joey Barton? Why is that?
Talks too much.
Talks too much?
He talks too much. It would just drive me mad.
Alright, okay.
I'd just chuck him in the bin.
Okay. Ibi Akas at Review Football. Thanks very much.
Alright.
Cheers. So now it's time for Stat of the Week. So Dave, TJ and Pete have been tirelessly researching all the stats that are available, made available to us by our data provider Opta, and have come up with some absolute gems. I'm going to start with, well, TJ, it's your first time on the podcast.
Yes.
Why don't you hit us with a stat? What have you got?
Since Xabi Alonso's gone to the Bundesliga, he has completed, out of all the completed long balls that Bayern have played, he's completed 26% of them, with a 75% completion rate. So he's attempted 142 long balls, completed 106 of them. That's 25% of all, or 25.6% of all of Bayern's long balls.
That's very high. A quarter of a whole team's
long
balls.
Yeah, exactly, for one player. It just shows that kind of his role when he's come in. He's going to come in. Sometimes he's that third centre back. He's picking up the wingers with his long balls. I just thought that was something that really stood out to me.
I know it's awful, and people on Twitter will castigate us for this, but if we're talking about a quarterback in a team, I know, I'm sorry I used
literally
it.
Literally as a quarterback.
Literally, he's been brought in by Guardiola with one role in mind, and it's to ping. He is a ping merchant.
Yeah.
And that there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Good stat. Pete, come to you next. What's your stat of the week?
You may or may not be surprised to know that my stat comes from the Liga this week.
Shock. Never. Shock.
This week, Carlos Eduardo scored 5 goals for Nice against Gangon. Mm-hmm. He registered a performance score of 199, which is the highest of any player across Europe's top 5 leagues this season. Mm. Interestingly, he also became the first player ever in history to be awarded a perfect 10 by French magazine L'Equipe for a Ligue 1 match.
I didn't know he'd been awarded a 10 by L'Equipe. Wow.
Very good.
To give him a perfect. There have been 7 10s in the history of the game. Messi's got 2. Lewandowski got 1 for the performance against Real Madrid, but they've all the 10s have come in Champions League matches or international matches. Mm. He's the first player ever to get in a Liga match.
Amazing. If you're not aware, L'Equipe, their marks out of 10 for players are notoriously harsh, and it's very difficult to get anything above an 8. Okay, very interesting. Dave, stat of the week, what have you got?
Well, I'm going to go to the Bundesliga.
Okay.
I'm going to go to Wolfsburg.
All right.
And it's kind of like a why did Chelsea sell me stat?
Oh,
so okay. We're going down the lines of Kevin De Bruyne has created 36 chances in the Bundesliga this season, registering a whopping 5 assists. So he's created 13 more chances than any other player and 2 more assists. So my question to you, Pete, is why did Chelsea sell him?
Because he wasn't getting enough game time. He didn't do enough work. He didn't press as often as Oscar and Willian did. He can afford to be a luxury in the Wolfsburg team. In the Chelsea team, he can't be a luxury.
Would you say he's a luxury, or he's become their main man, and he's a player that Chelsea could have looked to build a future around with the likes of Eden Hazard, with the likes of Oscar
and Willian do absolutely incredible work tracking back and defending. De Bruyne, whenever he played for Chelsea, and even last year at Werder Bremen, he never did that. And that's why he was sold, unfortunately. I was sad. I liked De Bruyne as a player. I thought he was very good. But he just doesn't offer enough defensively for Mourinho.
Will you buy him back in 3 seasons?
Quite possibly.
Right, we've heard all the stats. Let's go to a vote. There's been budget cuts, so this week the winner of the Stat of the Week gets a Belvita breakfast biscuit instead of the traditional Malteser or whatever. I am sorry, guys, but that's the best we can do. It's high in fibre. So it's got that going for that. Other breakfast biscuit providers are available in supermarkets. Dave, who do you vote for a stat of the week?
I'm going to go with the 10 out of 10 from Pete. I did hear about Carlos Eduardo over the weekend. Apparently five goals and one assist. So directly involved in six goals in one game, which is fantastic.
Okay, fair enough. Pete, who are you voting for?
I was going to go for Tejo in his debut. I was very impressed by the Xabi Alonso stat. I mean, everyone talks about Pep Guardiola's team as short retention of the ball, but to hear that Alonso's playing that many long balls is impressive.
Okay, and TJ, what's your vote?
I like Pete's stat. There are only seven people to do that in the history of the equip rating system. It's pretty exceptional, so good find, Pete.
Okay, fair enough. Pete, you win stat of the week and you get a Belvita breakfast biscuit. Oh. Do you actually want it?
I'll have it, go on then.
You'll have it? Oh, right, okay, this is good.
I think it's the first time I've won stat of the week and
really?
There's no chocolate involved.
Well done. Oh, I'm really sorry, mate.
Alright.
We'll try and sort out the budget for next week. We might have to cancel Ibby. Ibby's very expensive to get on the show. Right, last but not least this week, something a bit more fun. We're gonna have a little debate. It's the Manchester Derby this weekend. We all know that. Big game, there's been some good games in the past. Two pretty amazing squads in terms of forward talent. I would like you, gentlemen of the Scorecore podcast, to come up with the best Manchester United and Manchester City combined five-a-side team. Okay, so let's start in goal, and obviously it's a straight shootout between David De Gea and Joe Hart. What do we think?
Oh, it's got to be David De Gea.
It's got to be David De Gea. David De Gea, Dave?
Yeah, it's pretty much David De Gea penciled in, really. His footwork, his shot stopping, but you got to mention Joe Hart has had a pretty good season under the radar, so yeah, but David De Gea for his ball retention, I'd say.
I'm surprised that you've all gone for David De Gea so quickly.
Hart is a good goalkeeper with his feet. I mean, we saw when he was playing for the England under-21s, he scored a good penalty in the Euro under-21s about 6 years ago, but De Gea's distribution is something else. I think he's got it going.
Okay, fair enough. Who have you got in that defensive role? Who's going defence? Is it Chris Smalling? Is that what we're...
It's not Phil Jones.
It's not Phil Jones.
Hasn't made it.
I don't know. I reckon Dave might vote for Phil Jones.
Yeah, vote for Phil Jones.
I don't think that Dave's going to vote for a single Manchester City player. So the fact that he's voting for Phil Jones really isn't a surprise at all.
I'm going to go the other way here and say that if I were to pick all players, I would go with a very Spanish team. So obviously they can communicate with each other, like my other five-a-side team that we had before that had a good link with retaining the ball.
Okay.
But obviously we're not picking the players as a team, we're just picking them as individuals. And I'd say Phil Jones this season.
You could pick them as a team. You're seriously picking Phil Jones.
As a team, I'd go for a Spanish-speaking defender then.
Phil Jones.
So I'd go for Rojo.
You'd go for Marcos Rojo.
I'd go for Marcos Rojo. Because
what about Pablo Zabaleta?
I'd go with Pablo Zabaleta. Because he's Spanish-speaking. He can tackle. He's tenacious. He can get forward. Yeah, so I'd go with Pablo Zabaleta as my defender, actually.
Okay. Pablo Zabaleta. Teach, what do you reckon for defender?
Pretty tricky. Yeah, I think Zabaleta's a good shout. He's one of those guys who's got a good bit of fitness, which is something that you need in five-a-side. I'm thinking about company, but it's just not really the kind of player you need for five-a-side. It's more of an 11-a-side kind of player, so I have to agree with Dave and Zabaleta. I think, yeah, what about you, Pete?
It's a tough call. I don't, as a rule, like playing fullbacks in five-a-side teams.
As a rule?
Well, this seems to be a fairly popular thing in the world right now, picking your favourite five-a-side team.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realise this feature went against your beliefs.
No, it's fine. It's not quite niche enough.
It's not illegal.
It is not, unfortunately. I think, unfortunately, just lack of alternative options is going to have to be Pablo Zabaleta.
Pablo Zabaleta?
Because I don't think other fullbacks are as good defensively as he is. And I think the problem with the centre-backs currently in the two Manchester squads is that, bar really company, none of them are that good on the ball. And I don't think I trust company a five-a-side team.
Okay. I definitely will.
Okay. Fair enough.
What about Kolarov and his left peg? Give him the ball; he can score from anywhere.
Do you want a fairly two-footed player in five-a-side?
Yeah, I don't really want him shooting, maybe right there. It's not the way I want to play.
Yeah, well, that obviously that goes against company.
Okay, so we've got De Gea in goal. We've got Zabaleta as our defender. Who's in midfield? There's some options here.
I think Di Maria's got
it. Di Maria, yeah.
Di Maria is pretty much.
Can you imagine Di Maria on a five-a-side pitch? Good lord.
It would be sensational.
I think David Silva's got to be in there as well.
David Silva, Dave. Any other names you'd like to throw in there?
Yeah, I'd like both Di Maria and David Silva, and I'd potentially throw Wan Mata as well.
Well, this is five-a-side, so you've got to have one striker.
Marouane Fellaini could be an interesting option.
Oh my goodness.
Going against my Spanish spanking
I can't believe
speaking side.
Spankings.
My Spanish speaking side. Yeah. But Marouane Fellaini would really tear it up. He would dominate the five-a-side arena.
He'd be a difficult opponent, but...
I'm surprised that no one's mentioned Yaya Toure.
Ooh, that's a very good point. You'd need a bit of balance. Di Maria and David Silva is a bit lightweight.
I think Toure. So
what are we saying?
How's Toure going to lose the ball?
Toure and Di Maria just stand over the ball.
No one can tackle him.
Toure and Di Maria?
That's what I go for, personally. I know that...
Dropping David Silva, especially for a five-a-side game, seemed brutal.
I'm a harsh man.
Pete, final decision.
Di Maria and Toure.
Di Maria and Toure, TJ?
I think Silva's been better this year, so Di Maria and Silva for me.
Di Maria and Silva, Dave?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Big Marouane. I think I'm going to go with Di Maria and Silva.
Di Maria and Silva in midfield. Okay, they're going to have to put in a shift. And
see if anyone actually wants to win this game.
Yeah.
We're going to score more goals, that's all we're going
to
do.
And finally, the one I've most been looking forward to, who do we play up front? You get one choice. Now, the realistic options are Aguero, Falcao, Van Persie, Rooney.
It's not very difficult, is it? It's Aguero.
Dave, you can't vote for James Wilson.
Dave, it's got
to
be Aguero.
It has to be Sergio Aguero, Dave.
Dave is a Manchester United fan, and Dave is pondering hard.
We're going to have to go back to the midfield, I'm sorry. I forgot a key man. James Milner. How can we have a five-a-side team without James Milner, and it's criminally incorrect? So I'm going to change, go back and say Di Maria, James Milner, combination in midfield. On to the forwards.
So hang on, we've got an issue. We've got Di Maria Milner, Di Maria Toure, Di Maria Silva.
Does Milner speak Spanish?
Yes, he does. He's learning Spanish.
Of course,
That's why he got to the side.
Of course.
Well, with that in mind, there's a three-way tie. I have the casting votes in this situation, and I see no good reason to vote for anything other than Di Maria and Yaya Toure, which is clearly the best combination here. I'm sorry.
You need fitness and five-a-side, mate. Is Yaya Toure going to get around the park? No, he's going to be waltzing around.
It's only a half-hour game, mate. He'll be fine. He'll be absolutely fine.
That was it. Was good.
Milner has too much energy for five-a-side.
Here's
a question for you. What if you got back-to-back games in that week in five-a-side? Yaya Toure ain't going to make the second game.
And Milner's on the bench then.
You
don't go into a back-to-back
mate,
game without
subs. He never takes subs.
Exactly.
No.
That's why you always lose.
moving on, let's agree on a striker. Pete's vote for Aguero.
No
TJ?
It's no one else, it's got to be Aguero.
Dave, can we convince you to say Aguero straight off the bat?
I'm going to go with yes, but I've got some valid points for some other players.
Okay.
Wayne Rooney would get around in a lightweight midfield, which we don't have anymore, would do quite well. Van Persie. Clean striker, can score goals, but Aguero
speaks Spanish.
You're
talking about ability.
Aguero speaks Spanish.
And that's what my team is. Spanish-speaking players.
But Yaya
Toure speaks Spanish.
Yeah, but James Milner's better than Yaya Toure at either side. He's more rounded.
All right, okay. So the final team is De Gea.
I think people are forgetting how good Yaya Toure was last season. And just based on this.
I think he's been criminally overlooked here. Criminally. But he's in our team, which...
Best midfielder in the league last season by some distance.
But he's not replicated that form this season.
Yet.
Inconsistent.
Give
him time.
Yet. Fair enough, yet. He did score, I think he scored his first four goals, you know, I think, three of them were direct free kicks. He had some absurd, you know, chance conversion on free kicks, which isn't likely going to happen ever again.
Not even Ronaldo has that, though.
Well, that's what I mean. So that those goals that he scored from direct free kicks this season, you will never be able to replicate that in his career again. It's just unnatural.
Well, we've agreed on our team. It's David De Gea in goal of Manchester United, Pablo Zabaleta in defence, Di Maria and Yaya Toure in midfield, and Sergio Aguero up top, making it 3-2 to Man City, which is pretty much what you'd expect it to be, given the balance of the teams at the moment.
You'd probably go home if they turned up, wouldn't you?
Not
worth it.
You'd say, all right, lads, let's just wait in the pub.
Let's go to the pub.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for joining us on the Squawker podcast. We'll be back next week with more of the same. Thanks a lot.